All right, back here on the Connor Happer Show, 1620 The Zone. 1620thezone.com. We're joined now by Parker Gabriel from the Lincoln Journal Star. Good afternoon, Parker. How are you?
I'm doing well, Connor. How are you?
Good. Your thoughts on the Big Ten potentially adding an alliance game and eliminating divisions?
Yeah, this is something that's sort of been, you know, Trev Albert made it sound this fall like it was something that the Big Ten was going to do until the playoff expansion conversation sort of got tabled.
Yeah.
And then they decided that they wanted to know what qualifications were going to be to gain entry to the playoff, which makes sense. You want to structure your regular season in a way that maximizes, you know, your ability to be represented in the playoffs. So the division, getting rid of divisions, I think that's a newer element, although I do think it's been under consideration for some time. It'd be interesting, you know, like I totally understand why the Big Ten wants to, you know, consider going back to 8 league games, especially if the SEC is not going to come to 9.
Yeah.
The counter to that is if you're going to have an alliance game or even 2 alliance games, which is what Albert said was a possibility, I guess you'd have to convince me. I haven't thought through it all the way. I guess you'd have to convince me that playing an ACC and a Pac-12 school is somehow going to be better for your playoff odds than just playing another one of your Big Ten foes each year.
Well, I guess it depends on who you get, which it depends on who you get in the Big Ten, too.
Right, it does. But, you know, okay, so let's take that to sort of its logical conclusion. The reason why you play alliance games, like, broadly speaking, is money, right? Like, the ESPN or Fox or Amazon or whoever it is that's dishing out broadcast rights money in 2025 or 2026 or 2030 or whatever, like, they don't, assuming that sort of the brand names stay similar, like those games that are going to draw huge crowds, you're probably not talking about Ohio State playing Georgia Tech, right? I mean, like,
yeah,
you're talking about Clemson, Florida State,
yep,
Oregon, USC, and Nebraska, even though it hasn't played like one of those teams in recent years, is always going to draw, has always drawn big numbers. And so, you know, like, I think if you're Nebraska in this conversation, you'd be going into this saying, like, hey, you know, no offense to Oregon State, probably not going to draw Oregon State very often in alliance games, right? I mean, you're going to be talking about the big boys in both of those other leagues. And that's just the way it goes, like, if you want to make money on it. So to me, like, Maybe it can be beneficial, and certainly that, you know, it seems like how the playoff's going to be structured matters in this conversation. So this is sort of the name of the game for athletic directors and commissioners all over the country right now, is you're trying to plot the future, and you don't know what a couple of the really big pieces of the future actually are going to look like at this point.
Yeah, maybe. That's interesting. Maybe you'd put in there that it's. The scheduling, especially the alliance game or two or whatever it is based on a competitive metric rather than, you know, a prestige metric. How do they do the Big Ten ACC challenge? Is it, I mean, that's when schedules just line up, and I think a lot of it is based off of what those teams had done kind of the previous year, then they make the matchup. Maybe you can make it a little bit closer to that instead of, well, Nebraska really hasn't held up their end of the bargain, and they're probably going to get like a USC or, you know, in this
right,
alliance game.
Yeah, that's true. Although the flip side of that is that, you know, one marquee basketball game, or, you know, like if Michigan State doesn't play Duke every year in the Big Ten ACC Challenge, you're not, the revenue consideration, especially because you're playing 30 other games in the regular season,
yeah,
and with the, you know, the money that you know you're going to get from the tournament, it doesn't matter quite as much as, you know, who the Buckeyes are playing on September 12th or whatever in football.
Yeah.
I do think one way, and I'm pretty confident that this is part of the consideration, is one way to sort of address that without taking premier matchups, big number matchups off the board in alliance games, is to say, look, the Big Ten, they have control over their own schedule in terms of how the league goes. So best you can tell, you know, you're always scheduling a couple of years out at least in this consideration probably, but best you can tell, look, Nebraska, you're going to get a big rating, and this is just the way it is. Like, you're going to play Oregon this year, or you're going to play Clemson this year. But on top of that, we're not also going to, let's say it's Clemson, we're not also going to make you play USC and then have your crossover games this year.
Yeah.
The Ohio State, Penn State, and whoever, you know what I mean? So like, you can protect by, maximizing primetime spots and also not completely stacking the deck in terms of who you're playing in the league against the team in any given year. Because, like, that doesn't do Michigan any good either, right?
Sure.
To get two marquee crossover games. And then, oh, by the way, you know, you got to play Ohio State, Penn State, Wisconsin, and Minnesota all this year, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's already conspiracy theories out there who Nebraska's, like, permanent opponents would be. It's like, yeah, well, they
Ohio
always
State,
get
State, Michigan, and Wisconsin or something like that.
Yes, every single year. Sign me up for Ohio State. Yeah. No, that's exactly what the people don't want. They would do that as like a, I mean, really, it would be a geographical perspective, right?
I would think so. Like, I saw a question, I saw someone sort of say, like, on Twitter earlier today, like, who would be Nebraska's three protected rivals in this situation? And, like, I don't, maybe I'm naive to, like, how much or how little geography would play, but, like, doesn't that conversation seem pretty simple from Nebraska's standpoint? Like if you were just dreaming it up and you wanted it ideally, like, maybe I'm a prisoner to the current division setup, but, like, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin seems to make sense in
yep.
that conversation,
those,
right?
Those are the three that I immediately mentioned for sure. That would be my plan A.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, now you got to line it up, too, where, like, if you think about it from Minnesota's perspective, like, you know, Wisconsin, and I mean, it probably is the same. That group of four schools just seems to make a lot of sense to me.
Right.
I don't think Wisconsin fans would probably tell you, like, well, wait a second, we want to play at Ryan Field every year or every other year or something like that. But I don't know, maybe. But yeah, those four, like, that seems like a pretty natural quadrant in this particular proposal.
Yeah. Who does Northwestern get stuck with? Because you're right, the quadrant there, I think all four of those schools would want to play the rest of the three on a yearly basis. I think, and then there's Northwestern, who's also there geographically, but also nobody really cares to have a rivalry with.
Right. Yeah. Well. Like, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, I guess there comes a competitive advantage. Elements of the conversation. Like, I don't know. It seems to me that you could take two what are relative rivalries, right? And with Northwestern and Illinois and then Indiana and Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
But historically speaking, not, and in a given year, one of or two of those teams are probably pretty good. But, like, that would leave the other one as well, there's 14 schools, so the math doesn't quite work at this point. But you know, that would be like, then you'd leave the big dogs in what is now the Big Ten East to their own group too. And is that fair? I don't, you know, there would be, there's, this is all like a wonderful invitation for just more griping in the future.
Sports Talk Radio, man. It's perfect. I just spent like 20 minutes talking about it. And now here we are, we've spent 10 more minutes talking about it. It's fun.
Yeah, exactly.
It's good stuff. It's good fodder. Let's get to some Nebraska football specific items here. One thing that, I don't know, it kind of has gone on under the radar this week, but the addition of Omar Brown, and an FCS All-American, Nebraska had an FCS All-American last year in Samari Toure, and it and it worked out, I think, pretty well for them. This feels like a pretty big addition, and now you've revamped the secondary altogether. I guess, what are your thoughts on the add and how big it could be for Nebraska?
Yeah, I think it's a substantial one, you know, and the only hesitation, I think he's going to compete for a starting job. That's an easy thing to say because,
sure,
you know, Travis Fisher could sit there on the first day of spring and tell you, like, yeah, everybody's competing for a starting job. But, like, I think he's going to be in the mix. Now, I'm not going to sit here on January 26th and guarantee that he's just going to waltz in and start or something like that. But I think he's going to be a factor, assuming that he's healthy. We know he missed the last few games of the season last fall because of an injury. I don't maybe you do. I don't know specifically the extent of that injury. But I think if he's healthy, he'll jump into the mix pretty quickly. I mean, when you watch him, you know, he can run, he can turn and run, he finds the ball pretty well. He had 6 interceptions as a freshman. And in 2019, I think teams learned to be careful throwing at him in that, you know, in that conference at least. And so, like, that's a really interesting group. And you're right. I mean, Travis Fisher and the, you know, the guys on the recruiting trail have really infused a lot of new players into that group. And one of the things that's interesting to me is, so Quentin Newsom played well last year overall and got better as the year went on, and I think it's a really pretty solid option at corner. So you figure he's got a nice chance at a starting job. You know, it's maybe not quite the mortal lock that Cantillon Britt was coming into this fall, but, I mean, he's going to be a tough out. And then you've got Braxton Clark and Marquise Buford. You've got a young guy also like Damon Lynham. And now you add sort of opposite ends of the transfer spectrum, Tommy Hill, who is a highly regarded 4-star guy, played some at Arizona State as a true freshman, and Omar Brown, who, you know, he was recruited out of high school, obviously, ended up at Northern Iowa and became an All-American at a lower level. So I just think, you know, and that's before you get to the questions that they have beyond Miles Farmer at safety. So when you size it all up, like, I don't know. Like, and then Javier Martin obviously is in that mix,
yeah,
too. He just committed a couple weeks ago. So, like, is one of those guys or multiple of those guys ticketed for safety? Like, I just sort of wonder if you were a fly on the wall or if you could pick Travis Fisher's brain on this one. Like, I wonder how he thinks it might fall together, or maybe he's just like, I don't know. We're just going to roll him out there and see what happens.
That would be my guess. It feels like a little closer to his personality. Let's put a bunch of guys in a room and watch them scrap, you know? That kind of feels, yeah, like what he would want.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, you know, the thing about Omar Brown was he went in the portal on one day, and it was like it was pretty clear what was going to happen like the next day. And in the meantime, a whole bunch of schools were interested in him. So, like, to me, I don't know. I mean, I know they kind of – obviously, they kicked the tires on a lot of defensive backs over the past 2 months. Javier Martin was a late add to the class, too. But when you just sort of read how that all went down with how fast Omar Brown had a bunch of options, including Nebraska, as soon as he went in the portal, I mean, that strikes me as a – regardless of whether they thought they needed one more scholarship defensive back or not, they just thought he was too good to say no to.
Mm.
And that is probably at least somewhat instructive of what they're expecting from him, you know, pretty much right away.
Yeah. Is that the room, maybe offensive line too, that you would go into spring ball and you're thinking, I genuinely don't know how this is going to turn out?
Well, okay, put it this way. Like, I don't think – I'd be surprised if Teddy Prochazka was a full go this spring just because of, you know, knee injury when it happened in October. And he's such a big kid. You know, he just – there's just really no reason. I mean, the most important thing for him is to make sure that he's healthy. So let's say he's not
– Yeah.
Let's say he's not full go in spring. I think that it's possible that they could roll out combinations of lineups where none of the guys – who are on the field with the number one unit whenever they roll out for the first day of spring ball are in a position that they've played in a game before. Like, it's completely wide open, right? I mean,
yep.
You could have Hunter Anthony at right tackle, or you could have him at left tackle, or you could have him at guard. You could have Henry Letovsky at either guard spot. You could have Kevin Williams at either guard spot or either tackle spot. You could have Nori Nwelle playing where he did last year at left guard, or maybe he's at right guard, or maybe he's at center. And not only have a lot of these guys practiced at different positions before, including the two incoming guys, Anthony and Kevin Williams, but now you've got a new coach who is looking at each of those guys with a different set of eyes than the way that they were evaluated in the past. And so, like, I don't know what to think about who's going to play where. And that's outside of sort of assuming, although, you know, we did this with Turner Corcoran last year, and so I want to be at least a little, to use a simpleism, I want to be a little careful about just handing Prochazka always the left tackle for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, he looked pretty darn good there. And so, you know, outside of guessing that if Prochazka was fully healthy today, he'd be playing left tackle, like, I legitimately, you could convince me on every single other player in the room playing either the spot they did last year or something different.
Okay, so that's two groups.
Other than that, we know everything about it.
Exactly. All right, Parker. Plenty of time to sift through it all. Although, you know, spring ball's not that far away at this point. We'll let you go.
Only a month to go.
Only a month to go. We'll let you go, man. Thanks for taking the time, and see you later.
Have a great week. And grow your beard back.
Yeah, I'm going to try. Thank you. Parker Gabriel from the Lincoln Journal Star. Didn't need the advice from him, but he's right. He hasn't seen this current bald face iteration of me, but he has seen a previous one before, and he knows. And he's the same way. He's beard guy, and when he shaves his beard, he looks relatively ridiculous. So we'll throw it back that way too. All right, we'll take a quick break here. Come back, round things out, update you on poll questions, and what to watch tonight as we near 2 o'clock here on 1620 The Zone.